com. Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And good morning, America. Good morning, other great places throughout the Midwest, including right here in Wisconsin and the great place called Waukesha. My name is Jim Santel. It is Saturday, June 4th. It's the 153rd day of 2022. How exciting is that? I am delighted to be with you this morning. Thank you so much for joining me for this inaugural program, this inaugural broadcast of what we're calling Morning Cannolis with, yes, me, Jim Santel. I'm going to talk to you more about the definition of what this program is all about, where that name comes from in just a few moments. But let's begin today with looking back at a few historical things in our nation's history, our world's history. It was way back in 1912 on June 4th that Massachusetts first passed a minimum wage law. The first time in the United States of America we had a minimum wage law way back in 1912. 1945 was the year on June 4th that the United States, Great Britain, France, and the Soviet Union agreed to divide up occupied Germany. Many people regard that as the start of the Cold War. 1945 on June 4th. Other significant events on June 4th. Way back in 1989, 33 years ago, the horrific events of Tiananmen Square, and to this day, reverberating around the world, including in China, as the government there tries to suppress even any recollection of what happened on that day 33 years ago, June 4th, 1989. 1992, a little bit more recent, United States framework, the UN framework on Convention on Climate Change was signed in New York City, initiating a lot of our national and our worldwide focus on this very important issue, 1992. 2018, not too long ago at all, things we talk a lot about here at WAUK. Donald Trump tweeted, "I have the absolute right to pardon myself." Perhaps we'll talk about that down the road as well. 2020, just a couple of years ago, was the day. June 4th today was a memorial held in Minneapolis for George Floyd and the horrific event, the civil rights event, the deprivation of his life, kicking off protests, and perhaps one day some reform when it comes to policing and law enforcement generally in America. And not to be outdone by the past history, we've got something from just today. This is the first weekend today, the first Saturday in our nation's history when you can go to Washington, D.C. and check into what is no longer the Trump Hotel on the corner of 14th and Pennsylvania Avenue right there. It's been turned into a new hotel. It's now the Waldorf Astoria, 263 rooms opening couple of days ago, including today, the first weekend that it's open, now called the Waldorf Astoria, and for a very modest $1,000 or so, you can get a room there right in Washington, D.C. So all those events happening on June 4th, also happening on June 4th. Yes, that's right. This is the inaugural broadcast, the inaugural discussion, our group together today, you, me. I've also got Connor here as my producer right here in the studio in downtown Waukesha on the streets of Waukesha right here in Wisconsin Avenue. Connor is here with me throughout the next 2 hours, and we're going to be chatting about a number of different things. As you heard in the intro, we're going to be sampling the news desserts of the week. We'll get back to that in just a few moments or so. Kind of a weekend review of many of the significant issues that we've talked about, stories that have influenced the nation, our state, our locality, and our world for the past week. And then also focusing on one or more of those issues in a major way, in a way that perhaps we haven't talked about during the course of the week itself. Very, very excited to have you with me today, and Connor also today, as we are in the WAUK studios right here in downtown Waukesha. This is 5:40 a.m., 101 FM, The Shaw in Waukesha. And again, my name is Jim Santel. I have had the great honor for the past 4, maybe even closing in on 5 years, to spend a great deal of time in this studio, also in the studio in Madison, the studio in downtown Milwaukee, formerly on Brady Street, spending some time with you and especially with Mike Crute and with Dom and others talking with you about the current issues of the day. I'm hoping that Mike will continue to invite me, as will Brian and Connor and Dom and others here, back on a regular basis during the course of the week to talk about many of those significant issues as they break in news. And that will not stop. And I'm looking forward to that here just this past week, both on Wednesday and Friday, chatting about some of the current events that you are also concerned about and focused on a regular basis. That will continue. That will continue if indeed Mike and others invite me back. I have every reason to believe that that will happen. But we are today starting this brand new program, 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock, right here at WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM, the Shaw in Waukesha. I am typically going to be here in the studio, although, as you know, today, much of the programming coming out live from the Shaw is right here at the Waukesha Farmers Market. You heard Don right before this program began, along with Mike, at that Farmers Market, 125 West St. Paul Avenue. It's along Fox River, the Waukesha State Bank parking lot right over there. And we go back there at the end of this two-hour period. Encourage you very much to be a part of that important community event, knowing that you always have a voice here at WAUK, whether you're calling in sometime later in this program this morning, during the course of the week, many of the other programs here on WAUK, and also visiting wonderful people like Mike and Don and others at that Waukesha Farmers Market today and at future Saturdays. Very exciting here in the city of Waukesha. And again, I am professionally honored, personally delighted to begin today's program, starting some time with you on a regular basis. Virtually every Saturday morning, I'm going to join Connor here in the studio, or perhaps sometimes at the farmers market during the course of the summertime, talking about some of these critical issues that we have not chatted about a lot during the week, at least not in the depth that we're going to go into on these Saturday morning programs. And so today, I'll tell you a little bit more about what we're going to do. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about who I am. For those of you who have not heard from me before, I welcome you to this program. Looking forward to a continuing, wonderfully productive, wonderfully engaging association conversation with you, getting callers to call in and talk on a regular basis about their questions, their comments or observations about many of the topics that we'll raise. Looking forward to that very, very much. And as I said at the outset, as Connor told us at the outset, we're calling this Morning Cannolis. Where does that title come from? Well, you should know that a couple of years ago, when Mike and Dom invited me to one of their anniversary programs just outside of Madison, we were celebrating the fact that they have been on the air for a significant time, important commentary in Wisconsin, other places throughout the Midwest, certainly in this part of the nation. And so on that particular day, as I was heading out to Madison, I decided to stop at my baker and picked up some cannolis. And so we celebrated with cannolis both on the air and off the air. Those of you who listened during the course of the week may recall that from time to time, Dom and Mike will chat about cannolis, and that has been a continuing great issue for us to chat about, even as our focus has principally been on even more serious issues. And so when Mike, a number of weeks, actually even months ago, approached me and said, gosh, Jim, maybe there'd be some opportunities for us to improve and even build upon even more some of the discussion that we have in the week. We talked about that a lot and began to put together the format for what is starting this morning as Morning Cannolis. Needless to say, the very clear and unmistakable and absolutely important way of describing the morning was to describe it as Morning Cannolis with me, Jim Santel. And so that's where the title comes from. And this morning, I will tell you, I stopped by my baker once again, consistent with Mike's commission to this wonderful program for the next couple of hours, stopped by my baker to get the cannolis so that both Connor and I could have a morning cannoli with you as we're talking about these issues. And lo and behold, on our first inaugural day, my baker said to me, Jim, very disappointed, the shells didn't come in. So I'm certain I'm going to hear about that from Mike and from Madame and from others. And so instead of cannolis this morning, much to my disappointment, and perhaps to Connor's as well, instead of cannolis, we're enjoying crullers here this morning, also a uniquely, maybe not completely unique, Wisconsin delicacy. In the future, cannolis, both here in the studio, WAUK, on Wisconsin here, also in other places. And so that's where the name comes from, and that's where we're going to be doing for the next probably in the future, next Saturdays, both here at the studio and also down the road at the Waukesha Farmers Market. I have been greatly honored during the course of the past 4 to 5 years to be a regular participant with Mike and Dom and others on this great show, on this great program, Waukesha, and other places throughout the Midwest, including Wisconsin. I thought I'd spend just a few more minutes before we go to our first break this morning, tell you a little bit about more about who I am. I am a lifelong resident of Wisconsin, grew up in Milwaukee, grew up in suburban Milwaukee, but spent most of my career, as I will tell you in just a moment, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I have pursued my profession as a lawyer. I grew up in the public schools in Waukesha. I'm a graduate of Brookfield East High School, and then went on to Marquette University, where, believe it or not, they gave me a degree in English and history after about 4 years or so of studies, and then decided to head south. Went to the University of Chicago in Hyde Park in Chicago for a couple of years at the law school there. And a little bit of a tease for something coming up. One of the professors I had there was a fellow named Antonin Scalia. We're going to talk about him in the second portion of our time this morning. But he was one of my professors at the University of Chicago. After that, I came back home, as my parents said at the time, and began a 2-year clerkship with a wonderful judge named Robert Warren. Many of you may remember him, former Brown County District Attorney, former Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin. And spent 2 years with him. And then after that, fell into what many of my friends and partners and colleagues in the profession described as a 3-decade rut in the U.S. Department of Justice. Actually, not a rut at all. Greatly honored again to serve as an assistant U.S. attorney for many, many years. And then also during the course of the Obama administration, serving as the United States attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. And so that brings me here. We'll tell you more about that and my connections to Wisconsin coming up in just a few moments. This is Jim Santel. I'm with Connor here in the studio. Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel here at the studios, WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, the Shaw in Waukesha. Delighted to be with you. Thank you so much for joining me. And right after the break, we're going to start in earnest in our discussion this morning. Also inviting you to participate. Questions, comments along the way. Thrilled. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel, WAUK Waukesha. And we're back. This is WAUK Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. It's the Shaw in Waukesha. My name is Jim Santel, and you're tuning in to our inaugural program this morning, our inaugural broadcast of Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. We're going to be sampling, yes, that's right, the news desserts of the week. How cute, how appropriate is that? It's going to be a weekend review of some of the important stories, undeniably with a great deal of focus on things like law and government, and frankly, the aspiration for justice in America. Lots of things we've chatted about during the course of the week. Now also on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Again, my great thanks to the station owner, operator, producer, guru, Mike Crute, who's invited me to be with you this morning and in the forthcoming Saturday mornings to chat with you, going a little bit deeper into some of the issues we've talked about during the week, not to the exclusion of my being participating in some of the other discussions during the course of the week itself. I'm here in the studio today, right on Wisconsin Avenue, here with Connor, who's my producer. And in a little while, we're going to be also soliciting your comments and questions at the number 844-967-2255. 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. But right before the break, I was talking with you not only about our commission, what we're going to be doing the course of these Saturday morning programs, talk to you a little bit about where that name comes from, the cannolis that almost, Connor and I are enjoying this morning. We got a substitute cruller here, but cannolis regularly on Saturday morning. Encourage you to join in that as well. And then also chatting with you a little bit about who I am. And for those of you who are new to this particular program, that's everyone, but new to hearing me. This is Jim Santel, and as I said right before the break, spent about 30 years as a civil litigator and criminal prosecutor on behalf of the U.S. Department of Justice, principally here in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, and the other counties in the eastern portion of this state, but also spent a good deal of time at so-called Main Justice in Washington, D.C. I mentioned right before the break one of the significant events today that's happening is we no longer have a Trump Hotel in downtown Washington. Instead, it's become the Waldorf Astoria. That hotel is actually about three or four blocks just directly west of the Main Justice building, right there on Pennsylvania Avenue. You see it on a regular basis in cable news stories and shows, that sort of thing. And certainly when presidents in their inaugural walk down Pennsylvania Avenue, you see the building in the background. But I spent about a couple of years there. I'm very honored once again to have worked for a former attorney general named Janet Reno. Janet Reno, and served there in an office called the Executive Office for United States Attorneys. And at that time, also got to know another fellow who is the Deputy Attorney General of the United States of America at that time. His name is Eric Holder. Eric Holder. And of course, you know that Eric Holder then became the Attorney General under Barack Obama. And it was during that period of time, as I mentioned before the break, that I had the great honor, the great privilege to serve the people of Eastern Wisconsin and all of our U.S. attorneys, we always say the entire nation, serving as the chief federal law enforcement officer in our specific district. And so for me, that was the Eastern District of Wisconsin, the easternmost counties, if you will, throughout the state, serving under Eric Holder, who is a frequent visitor to Milwaukee, to Eastern Wisconsin, and hopefully we'll be back again on a regular basis. But a great pleasure to work for Janet Reno, also for Eric Holder. And I will also mention that during the course of my 30 years or so as an assistant U.S. attorney, and then as a U.S. attorney, I worked for nine different attorneys general. And they're Republican and they're democratically appointed. Both parties bring their attorneys general to that Main Justice building, to the nation as chief of national law enforcement officers. And I will tell you, as I've said before, and it's going to color a lot of our discussions this morning and also down the road, that when it comes to prosecutions, when it comes to the importance of doing that role, the Department of Justice necessarily needs to be independent of politics. And although we had some significant breaches of that fundamental concept in the prior administration, it was my great pleasure and great experience not to be affected in any way by partisan politics or other things that might otherwise influence inappropriately through politics or other sorts of inappropriate bents or perspectives on the world. Law enforcement should not be that. It should be the enforcement of the law for all people, regardless of party, regardless of partisan affiliation, or any other immutable characteristics that make us great as Americans. All those things should animate the U.S. Department of Justice, any Justice Department, any law enforcement office throughout the United States of America. Great pleasure for me to serve in all those capacities. I also spent some time in Baghdad in Iraq, 2006 and 2008, serving as the Justice Attaché and the Rule of Law Coordinator. At that point, Attorney General Gonzalez was the Attorney General and had an opportunity, obviously, to spend time with him there and also in Baghdad, an experience I've also chatted about from time to time, working with Ryan Crocker and Zalmay Khalilzad, who were the ambassadors at that time. Also an experience given to me by you, the people of this nation, by the people of the U.S. Department of Justice, plainly something that colors and animates me to this day. When we chat about war, which we will do at some point down the road, and the impact of international relations, very much a part of my history as well. Also had a great opportunity, also invited by a former attorney general, a former deputy attorney general, to serve as a leader in litigation for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Western Michigan, of all places, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So a great opportunity there as well. And finally, let's come right back to Waukesha, right back to where we are today, here in the studios of WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw in Waukesha. Great pleasure to spend time because I live right down the street here in Brookfield, in this county, in this community. Waukesha is also my home, and we'll also tell you that on a regular basis, as I said yesterday when I was here, a great opportunity to be here on a regular basis. Enjoyed presentations and discussions with many of you at the Clark Hotel, just a few blocks from our location here. Great opportunity there, and also from time to time on stage, believe it or not, at the Waukesha Civic Theater, also just a couple of blocks down the street from where we are here at WAUK in downtown Waukesha. Right after the break, we're going to get back into the substance of our program, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. I'm here in the studio with Connor. We're going to come back and also take your questions, observations, as we talk this morning about one of those major issues, firearms in America, right after the break. And we are back. This is WAUK in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. This is The Shaw in Waukesha, Wisconsin, but also broadcasting throughout the state, other places in the Midwest. And I should also indicate that this program is going to be replayed again tomorrow morning on regular Sunday mornings for those of you who are unable to join us live right now. And this is Jim Santel. This is the first program that we're doing in the inaugural series of programs every Saturday morning, 9 to 11. We're calling it Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. And yes, indeed, Connor and I have some variation on a cannoli this morning. Maybe we'll get the real deal down the road. Again, Jim Santel with you. Also going to be taking your questions and comments beginning perhaps a little bit later this hour and then certainly the second hour of our time together. That number here at the Shaw is 844-967 2789. Write that down, memorize it so that when we're ready to have your phone calls come in, you are set to go as well. Again, this morning and in future mornings, we're going to do a little bit deeper dive into some of the very serious issues that are confronting us, perhaps from time to time, some of the non-serious issues, sampling those news desserts of the week, as Brian and others have said, again, with a lot of focus because of my background on law and government and justice in America, attempts that all of us undertake to deliver it to all people on a regular basis, sometimes with success, sometimes without. Again, my great thanks to Mike Crute, this wonderful staff here at WAUK, for inviting me to be with you, coming into your homes, your businesses, and right here in downtown Waukesha. I promised right before the break that we would get into one of the serious issues of our day, and that plainly from this past week, weeks, months, years, it's a focus on firearms in America. I don't need to review for any of you, the history of certainly recent weeks, but also recent years of firearm deaths in America, the significance of those, the importance of those to our life and our livelihood. There was a very interesting report the Centers for Disease Control issued not too long ago, indicating that we reached the highest level ever recorded in United States history in 2020, the first year of the pandemic, as gun-related homicides surged by 38% in 1 year. That's an historic increase by any measure. Highest level in over 25 years. The acting principal deputy director of the CDC, a doctor named Deborah Hoori, said more than 45,000 Americans died in gun-related incidents throughout the pandemic in the United States, the highest number on record that federal and other data show. And significantly, that violence has had a dramatic and unprecedented toll on our communities of color. And the early data suggests that that trend has regrettably, unfortunately, horrifically continued through 2021 and even into 2022. More than half of those gun deaths we know in past years and certainly in this year are a result of suicides. That number also did not substantially change from 2019 to 2020. The overall rise in gun deaths was 15% in 2020, and that, too, a very, very significant, sobering statistic for all of us, even here on a Saturday morning. So we're going to spend some time getting more into not just the stories behind that gun violence, but talking about the law. And talking about something that I've often chatted with Mike and Dom and others about during the course of the week, and that is the United States Supreme Court and what the Second Amendment says, what it doesn't say, what our highest court has told us it means. Revisiting that this morning, and yes, getting back to my tease about Justice Antonin Scalia, my former professor at the University of Chicago Law School, who taught me administrative law many years ago. Chatting about that case, we'll get into that in just a few moments. And then probably in our second hour, talking with you and taking your questions, your comments, your observations about something else the Supreme Court is going to be doing this month. This month, maybe at the latest, early next, but certainly next 4 to 6 weeks, deciding a major, major case when it comes to constitutional rights and gun possession, gun use, gun transfer, gun manufacturer, all those kinds of things. And so we're going to get into that right away. And let me begin this brief tutorial, if you will, again, inviting your questions along the way later this hour and certainly next hour at 844-967-2789. Connor and I here in the studio to take your calls and to respond to those. Let's begin with a real fundamental notion. We have chatted about this before in those many opportunities that I've had to talk with you and with Mike and Dom and others during the course of the week. Chief Justice John Marshall, in a case called Marbury versus Madison, one of the central seminal cases in our national history, said this. He said, "It's emphatically the province and the duty of the judicial department to say what the law is." He said that in 1803 in this case called Marbury versus Madison. What's the significance of that? That was the first time in our nation's very young history at that time that the court, the highest court, said, you know what? We're not just going to resolve the disputes that are set forth in the Constitution that James Madison and George Mason and others wrote into that. We're also going to tell you along the way as we resolve those disputes what the law is. We're going to take pieces of legislation, we're going to take actions by our government and determine whether they're constitutional or not. We're going to interpret the laws, we're going to do all that. And that came from 1803, Chief Justice John Marshall, Marbury versus Madison. Emphatically, he said, the province and the duty of the judicial department, meaning the judiciary, the federal courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court in particular, to say what the law is significantly, like so many other things we've talked about. That concept, well, it's sort of implicit in the Federalist Papers and sort of can be read into the penumbra of things that the Constitution sets forth. It's not explicit in the Constitution, but we now know and we accept it a couple of hundred years later as basic fundamental understandings of what our judiciary does. And so with that commission from John Marshall in the very early 19th century, let's talk about what the Supreme Court has done when it comes to guns and the intersection between the United States Constitution, the Second Amendment in particular, and then also the rights that you have under the Constitution, what those mean and what those do not mean. I'm going to talk a little bit more in the second hour about the actual text of the Second Amendment. Let's jump into this fundamental concept of trying to interpret what the Second Amendment really means, what its import is. And as you all know, the Second Amendment says this in linguistic language that is perhaps a little bit difficult to follow. It says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Following all that, James Madison, a great scribe, along with George Mason and others, but not necessarily the way that we'd write it today, but a huge focus there on the notion of militia. We'll talk more about that in the second hour, as I mentioned. But what does that mean? What does that Second Amendment right mean? And even as we invoke that in 2022 and in certainly years before and years to come, what should it really mean and what doesn't it mean? And so you should know that on four different occasions, until fairly recently, just about 14 years or so ago, the United States Supreme Court, in addressing what Article 2, the Second Amendment, actually means, those amendments to the Constitution, what that Second Amendment means, explicitly declined, refused, did not say that there is an individual right to gun ownership. They specifically said that the Second Amendment that we now seem to understand as incorporating that right, for reasons we'll get to in just a moment or so, is the Supreme Court on a regular basis, four different explicit occasions in our nation's history, up through and including early 2008, declined to say that particular amendment to the Constitution, the Second Amendment, prescribes and establishes for all of us a personal, individual, as opposed to the right of the people generally to have a well-regulated militia. First, never ever before had they said that there was an independent, individual right to gun ownership. That's our history. That is a significant part of our national history under the Constitution. So what happens? Well, in 2008, the United States Supreme Court issues a case, releases a case called District of Columbia versus Dick Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R, 2008. It is now 14 years old. This is still to this day good law in the United States of America. Heller is still the leading case as we get together here at 9:45 on a Saturday morning here in Waukesha and throughout Wisconsin, other places. This is still good law. How did that come about? Well, the District of Columbia had passed a law that basically said that when it comes to gun ownership, even inside your own home, you can't own a gun, has to be disassembled. You can have the pieces there, but pretty much restricting almost completely in the District of Columbia your capacity, your individual capacity to own a weapon. And again, up until that time, the United States Supreme Court had never ever said anything about an individual right to gun ownership. So what happens is Dick Heller looks at that and says, you know what, I think that's wrong. He says, I'm going to appeal that decision. I'm going to address the accuracy, the constitutionality of that District of Columbia law. I'm going to take it to federal court. I'm going to challenge what they have done under the Second Amendment. And lo and behold, for the first time in our nation's history, in 2008, the United States Supreme Court said that there is, in fact, under the Second Amendment, a protection of an individual's right to possess a gun disconnected with service in a militia, that initial language in the Second Amendment, and also went on to say that you can employ that weapon, use that weapon for traditionally lawful purposes, including self-defense in your home. Let me say that again. Under Heller, 2008, for the first time in our nation's history, a majority of the Supreme Court says that you've got a constitutional right under the Second Amendment to have an individual ownership of a firearm. You can possess that gun in your home for self-defensive purposes. That's a big change in our national understanding of what the Second Amendment means. And it happened just 14 years ago. Justice Antonin Scalia, one of the lions of the Supreme Court, an icon of the Supreme Court, who is no longer with us, but nonetheless did have an awful lot to do with the jurisprudence of our nation, issued that opinion. In subsequent cases, a case called McDonald versus Chicago in 2010 and Caetano versus Massachusetts, a majority of the justices also found that the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment incorporates these protections under the Second Amendment into actions of state and local government. So it's not just the District of Columbia, not just this particular law, but the announcement of that fundamental right in Heller extends everywhere, including right here in Waukesha, Wisconsin, throughout the Midwest, other places in communities nationwide. So that's a very significant historical development by Justice Scalia, by a majority of the Supreme Court. And to this day, it remains good law. And once again, what does Heller say in this 64-page majority opinion? Again, encouraging, as I always do, listeners to go and take a look at that. If you're not out at the Waukesha Farmers Market, when you come back with your goods and products, take a look at Heller in 2008. 90 additional pages, minority dissents. So this is not without its dissenting views. But 2008, an individual right to gun ownership in America, in your home, for the purposes of self-defense. Now, why is that so very important? As we begin to look toward the future and what is about to come, significantly, in Heller, in that case in 2008, the United States Supreme Court, from the pen of Justice Scalia, said this. Also said that there is nothing that from the time that a jurist named William Blackstone, a 19th century English jurist, commentators and courts have explained that this right to keep and carry a weapon is not unconditional, and that there are in fact limitations on that can in fact be imposed. And that is as much on the law of the state of all of the United States of America, including the District of Columbia, then as it is today. Writing for the majority, this is what Antonin Scalia said. He said that nothing in this opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places, such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. Hugely important language. Went on to say in a footnote 26 that by identifying these particular ways in which you can, in fact, control this kind of firearm use and transfer, these are presumptively lawful regulatory measures only as examples, list not at all being exhausted by any means at all. And so that's Heller. That is Heller. It remains the good law to this day. And so one of the commentaries I will offer to you as we begin to go into another break here and come back after the break is to talk with you about the fact that the Second Amendment today, yes, does establish for every American an individual right to gun ownership in the home for self-defensive purposes, but it also incorporates, by virtue of what the Supreme Court said, by virtue of what Antonin Scalia said, also, as the president has said, as many others have said, that it's not unconditional. And you do, in fact, the governments, local, state, federal, do have this opportunity, obligation, I would say an obligation, also to impose conditions on manufacture, sale, transfer, use, all those kinds of things. And that leads us into a further discussion about what the Second Amendment does and does not mean in America today. Join us right after the break. This is the Shaw, WAUK Waukesha. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. We're chatting today about firearms, also going to be taking your questions and comments at 844-967-2789. And And we're back for the final moments of this first hour on a Saturday morning, June 4th, of Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. I'm here at the studio at WAUK. I'm joined by Connor, my producer, and we're talking this morning about guns. A critically important issue, tragic issue in America as we continue virtually every day, certainly every week, undeniably every single month to sample the horror, regrettably, that continues to be visited upon Americans of all ages, of all races, backgrounds, nationalities, all immutable characteristics, no one immune to the horrors of gun violence in America. We're going to chat in our second hour about some possible remedies to this. But right before the break, we were talking about what the law is today, and specifically talking about what the Second Amendment does and does not say based upon this case called Heller, District of Columbia versus Dick Heller, 2008, from the pen of Justice Antonin Scalia. And I was chatting with you right before the break about how the Second Amendment, according to Heller, does prescribe an individual's right to possess a gun in your home for self-defensive purposes, but that it also establishes, as Justice Scalia told us, opportunities, and I would offer prerogatives and rights of our government to make limitations on that. That is also a part of the law today under the Second Amendment. And it is important to understand then that the decision in Heller is both a declaration of the rights of individual gun ownership, which is sometimes equated completely with the Second Amendment, erroneously, and an equally clear affirmation that governing options are out there to limit and, yes, to restrict them in the interests of public safety and security. Justice Scalia saying in Heller, the Constitution leaves the government a variety of tools for combating that problem of firearms-related violence, including measures regulating handguns. That's the Second Amendment today in 2022. The upshot of what James Madison wrote in 1791, the Second Amendment, and Antonin Scalia's lessons some 217 years later, is the Second Amendment undeniably confers some rights, some authorities, legal entitlements, lawful prerogatives on all Americans to keep and bear arms. Yes, that is what the law is. And at the same time, I would offer to you that it also prescribes the right to be free from life and liberty compromising violence of the sort that we have seen in America all too frequently in recent times. And that can be accomplished through some rational, public-minded restrictions and regulations that are balanced and reasonable on the manufacture, the sale, the transfer, possession, and location, and yes, use of firearms in America. Even the dissents in Heller underscore that basic duality, if you will, of the Second Amendment, even to this day on June 4th of 2022. So on this, as we approach the 14th anniversary, Heller was issued on June 26th, almost just under 14 years ago this month. It is good and right in understanding all this to know what the Second Amendment says, what it says in its entirety, not just a right to gun ownership in the home, but also a right, and as I've said, from my perspective, an obligation as they take the oath of office of our elected officials, our appointed officials, to protect us and to use those skills, those opportunities, those provisions of the law to keep us safe and secure. Reasonable regulation, limitations on guns, also a very much a part of what the law is today. That remains the law to this day as we go into the 10 o'clock hour and the first final moments of our inaugural program this morning. Let's talk about what happens after that. Well, again, that has been the law. Heller has been the law for the last 14 years until a couple of years ago. And this is the tease into the second hour, if you will. A couple of years ago, in the New York State, there was a follow-up case. We're going to call it Bruen, B-R-U-E-N, to distinguish it from Heller. This case is now pending before the United States Supreme Court, and it will be the first time in 14 years that the United States Supreme Court has revisited this issue of what the Second Amendment actually means, what it does not mean. And where does it come from? Well, the full name of the case is New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruen. And it comes about, as I said once again, as a result of New York law that basically imposes some limitations on the right beyond the home, beyond the home. And we're going to talk in the second hour about what Bruin portends, what the Supreme Court is addressing right now, and what that means for America going forward beyond June and beyond July, the summer of 2022, in our second hour, when we'll be inviting your questions and comments, 844-967-2789. This is WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis. Join us, stay with us, and join us again right after the top of the hour break.